So our next topic is going to be perceived neighborhood characteristics and the health of the Burundian refugees in the United States. Our presenter is Fletcher Njolore. She is with the Department of Health at the University of Texas at Taylor. She received her PhD from Texas Women University in Denton. And her area of research has to do with the health disparities among dispersed population and African immigrant population in the U.S. Please welcome Fletcher.
Thank you for the introduction and for this chance to be presenting to you. I just wanted to make a note. He actually pronounced my name really well, Njorore, so we don't have to chase him out of the room. Yeah, he has improved as the time went on. Also, just wanted to make a note that I'm actually a Kenyan, originally from Kenya, and so with our first presenter, I told her I'm a Kenyan and I lived in Nairobi. I know Isili really well, and lots of refugees, very many refugees in Nairobi, so we'll get to talk after this. Back to my presentation. This work was done when I was a postdoctoral research fellow at the University of Tennessee, Knoxville. After my PhD, I got a two-year postdoctoral research fellowship. They wanted specifically somebody who is bilingual, public health, somebody who can speak Swahili, and somebody who also speaks English, because this is a group that lived in Tanzania most of their time. They are semi-literate, and they can barely speak English. And so I had to go in because I can speak Swahili and English. And so I was working on a funded project. University of Tennessee is a very big university, of course, a big research institution. This was just one of the elements in terms of refugee help. They have big funding, and so we were collaboration of several departments. We had the Department of Law, we had social work, we had psychology, we had public health, we had political science, we had English, because they also teach English as a second language. I speak specifically on the work that I was involved in the Department of Public Health, and this is specifically work I was funded to do. So I have nothing to disclose except that it was funded through the university. It was a big grant, and several departments were involved. Burundian refugees are relatively a new group of refugees in the U.S. compared to other refugees in the U.S. The first arrival was 2006. When they came to the U.S., they had spent most of their time in Tanzania, and they were relocated because the Tanzanian government was closing the refugee camps. They were turning them into army bases. Most of these people were actually old, and so they were basically like stateless. They were neither in Burundi nor anywhere else, and so they didn't want to be repatriated back to Burundi. So we called them technically stateless, and so they had to be relocated. Refugees don't choose to leave their homes, neither do they choose to go where they have to go. The United Nations has the responsibility to resettle them. So they are all around the world, and this was basically like the first refugee Burundian community coming to the U.S. That has implications because for refugee populations that have been coming from the 70s, they already have support, they already have their own communities. And now when you are the first, it's like you have to make meaning for those who will come after you. So it has implications being the first of their own community coming in terms of being relocated as a refugee group, except for those who may come in on their own. Having said that they lived in Tanzania for a long time, they were not really exposed to formal education, except for their children, and not in the school system, but within the camp. This group came in initially as 139 adults, specifically in Knoxville, but others were in other cities. For this particular group, when they came in 2006, they were 139. But within 3 or 4 years, there were already 300 to 400 people by the time I was doing my postdoc there. This is what we call secondary migration, people who come in for various reasons, either running away from unsafe neighborhoods or coming in because of cheap housing or a relative. So secondary migration is a very big thing when we are talking about immigrants and refugee population. That has health implications because when you are resettled, you have provisions in the city within which you are resettled. If you choose to move, you may not be within the system of that city where you go. So you are basically on your own or support groups of people who know you. And that is really big in terms of whether or not they fare on well in terms of their health. This was a big study, like I mentioned, exploring health disparities among Burundian refugees in a small mid-southern city, that is Knoxville, not very small, but compared to other cities like Atlanta and Nashville, this would be small, but it's relatively big. The objectives were to explore newcomers or refugees, how they define resettlement, explore their lived experiences in connections to, and how they connect this to their health, whether mental, physical, and so on, then identify specific neighborhood characteristics that may be related to their health, and then this helps us to understand how place influences health for the refugees. What is the significance of our study? This is to inform program planners, service providers, those are resettlement agencies, policy makers, and also to contribute to the discipline. I already have a paper from the quantitative side which has already been peer-reviewed, and now this is a qualitative section, so that is contributing to the discipline. It was, like I mentioned, a mixed method study. For my particular section, I worked with 50 Burundian refugees who were willing to participate in the study. Of course, there were much more, but because of time, we worked with only 50. For this particular study, we were focusing on neighborhoods and health, and so we had open-ended questions that we separated from the quantitative study, and we asked them what neighborhood means to them, how they feel about their neighborhood, and how they can what would they like to tell the government about their neighborhoods, what brought them in there. We did recordings, because some of them would go to and fro repeating the same thing, so we really wanted to be sure we are recording what they are saying systematically. And we had transcriptions working with trained translators. We also took data on their demographics, men, women, and then their age groups, and we used Atlas TI specifically for the qualitative data analysis and lots of information we have on this study. Now, we had 31 participants who are female, and then we had 19 who are men for this study. The average age was 44 years. Then we had the youngest being 20 and the oldest being 82. And this person was really feeling lost. Then most of them had lived 3 years to roughly 6 years. We really wanted people who were still new in resettlement to understand their meanings, because the longer they stay, their meanings sort of like get transformed. And so my focus was on the newly arriving Burundians, especially given they were among the first from their community. And then a few other people had moved into the area, like I mentioned, secondary migration, for different reasons. Most of them, it was relatives and also cheap housing. I worked in 6 different neighborhoods. All refugees, when they come in the first year, they get free housing from the government. Usually resettled in very poor neighborhoods, and sometimes they also are settled in houses where the landlords are willing to give them free housing or cheap, not really free housing, cheaper housing. And so you can imagine, when we are talking about cheap housing, it's usually mostly run down. We didn't find any differences in terms of how men and women perceive their neighborhoods. It was like they were still all in the same state of understanding. What does it mean to resettle in the U.S.? What does it mean to live in a city, and especially when you can't speak the language or you don't know people from the neighborhood? Most of the themes range from mental, physical, psychosocial, and then issues related to neighborhoods, understanding what a neighborhood is, because from Africa, we talk about a community. And so for them, what is community? Does it include the other people? Is it just about themselves? Does it include physical buildings? So we really had to define to them what we mean by community, what we mean by neighborhoods, to bring them to understanding what we are looking for. The mental health issues among the refugees in our findings were mainly that they feel so isolated, they can't speak the language, and people still look at them as foreigners, especially unwanted, because as I said, refugees don't choose to go where to go. They are resettled in areas either where there are resources or where they have some housing where the government can accommodate them. Most of them mentioned that in the night, they hear a lot of gunshots. They hear the sirens with the police. They didn't live with sirens in the camps. And so it really disturbed them. Is it an ambulance? Is it a police? Something is happening. Even though they were used to gunshots, this was really shocking and traumatizing to them, because when they were leaving the refugee camp, they were told, you're going to peace, you're going to be resettled in a first world country, you're going to have free housing, you're going to be very comfortable. That did not happen. Most of them said they did not even sleep, especially if they had gunshots just next to the door. And in one house, the woman was seated in the living room and a gun just passed through the house, just barely missing her. And so we went in and she was showing us the marks. And she said she didn't know who did that, because by the time she was looking outside, the vehicle was gone. You know, the drive-through shootings, those are very common in the neighborhoods where they live. They said this is very traumatizing. It reminds them of the war in the camps, and they feel very uncomfortable. Most of them were saying we are better off in the camps because we can take care of ourselves. But here we don't know who is shooting. We don't know who is our neighbor. Here we feel very isolated. And so that was really disturbing to them. Then, like I mentioned, they're usually given free housing. It's really sort of like in isolated places. It's usually very rundown. Some of them, we found them in the summer, they didn't even have AC. And then some of them, when something breaks down, they don't know who to call, because the resettlement agency was overwhelmed in Knoxville. Knoxville is not a typical resettlement town compared to Houston, Dallas, and other big cities like, you know, Boston, where we have many refugees. So they were not the only refugee group in Knoxville. We also have from other places, Vietnam, Burma, and so on. So this city was really overwhelmed, and they were feeling uncomfortable, because they were told the houses they are coming in have everything, but the houses did not have everything. So for them, it was very disturbing. And remember, in the refugee camps, they only have United Nations representatives who do a three-day orientation. They are told everything is good. When they reach here, they have resettlement agencies who are not there in Africa to know what they were promised. So they have a lot of issues, a lot of worries. They do not know who the United Nations is. They do not know who the U.S. government is, and therefore who is responsible for their resettlement. And all these issues just make them fall in between the cracks. They also faced a lot of discrimination, like their children. The schools are very far, like I mentioned. Going to the market centers is really far. They can't read the signs. In the initial stages, they don't even have a car. They don't even have a license. And they have to have people who take them. And there are very few people who would want to be there every day to take you to school, to take you to the doctor, to take your child to the bus. And a few times, their children were actually thrown off from the bus because they were told, your children are smelling. And then they are also called, you are refugees. That is a stigma. They didn't like it. They felt like it was better when they were in the refugee camps. The children would walk to school. And then, of course, with the secondary migration, they felt like they had a responsibility to help their relatives who were coming in for lack of rent where they were, or more insecurity, but that did not make them even more safer. The landlords were uncompromising. If they didn't like them, they could actually be told to move without a reason, and they had no one to stand for them. We asked them if there was anything positive or if everything was negative. They said not all is really bad. They said the fact that we don't have to keep running in the bush, at least we have a roof on our head. So that gives us some peace. Then they also said they liked that there's plenty of food. Even though they didn't like the food, they wanted African foods. And so part of what we did with the students was to actually take them to culturally relevant food stores, teach them how to buy food. But there were issues. The young children want American food. The older parents want African food. And so we even had to have teaching classes. Cooking classes. How do they cook macaroni, which they have never cooked? How do they cook spaghetti, which they have never cooked? So we had to have students from the nutrition department work with us on weekends to teach them how to cook food for their children. And then I went into one couple's home and they told me, I'm very hungry. If you know where Obama is, tell him I need food. And I told him, I can bring you a bag of rice. And he said, I don't want rice. I want the food I ate in the camp. I want the food I ate in Africa. So having plenty of food in America means very different, something very different for the children and for the older people. They liked the hospitals, even though they said the waiting time was too long, or sometimes the processes. And then they were very happy. They had English as a second language center, so they could learn the new language especially for their children. We asked them what this meant, and most of them said health means absence of disease. We had to make them understand it goes beyond that, even spiritual, and they told us, oh, yeah, in fact, we have our own Burundian churches here. And then they also said, just being happy when you can have an event of your own. So we organized a lot of cultural events at least once every month. They brought in their own food. They did their cultural dances. We even introduced sports for the young people. And we had a dance group for their girls and the boys. And they were very happy with that. We asked them what security means. They meant not just the absence of guns, but also having our family members close by. The refugees are not resettled with their people. There are many who have left their own children in Africa. You talk of Kenya, there are people who left their children from Tanzania. Kenya is usually the transit. So they have many of them there, and they were crying and saying, if you know of somebody who can bring my children I left in Kenya, then I'll have peace. Then I can resettle. Otherwise, I'm willing to go back and be a refugee in the refugee camp. For as long as my people are there, I have peace and I'll be happy. And we also have people because of this who have even committed suicide, not necessarily from this group, but from other refugee groups, whereby if your people are not coming, you say, then of what use is it for me? I'm happy, I have food, but my people are still in the camp, or they're in Nairobi, I don't know who is taking care of them. So suicides are also common among refugee populations. For the elderly, they were asking me, where am I going to be buried? I don't have a home of my own. I don't care about the cars. I don't care about anything. I just want to know where my grave is. Because for us, in Africa, how they bury you is what is most important. And so, they said they wanted to be told where they'll be buried. They don't want to buy land for burial, you know, in the cemetery. And then, they also said community gardens were very important, and they want that in every place. And actually, in most resettlement places for refugees, they are provided for a garden. We asked what the garden meant. They said that is the time we can relieve our stress, we get to meet our friends, we can plant the vegetables we had in Africa, we can also just see our own children and relax. So community gardens mean so much in terms of refugee help. And then community centers for events where we met on weekends to have potluck, dances, and all these things. They wanted a sports field for their boys to play football, and we had coaches who actually volunteered. Now, this is not the only study that has been interested in refugee perceived neighborhoods and their health. There are many studies. Canada is really huge on this. Australia is really huge on this. Sweden is, and some European countries, and of course here in the US. But we would like to see more people come to do research with refugee and neighborhoods so we can have policies that can help them. At least have culturally relevant policies that resettle them either in places of people they know or with facilities they understand, including where they can shop food that is similar to their own, where they don't have to pay for a grave, and where they don't have to feel like they're foreigners. The communities where they come in should actually be oriented on the incoming refugees. I was very surprised when I went to present in Washington, D.C. much earlier on a different aspect of the Burundian refugees. And one of the people said, you mean we have refugees in Knoxville? This is a lady who worked in a policy office in Knoxville. So the community is not even aware they have foreign people. And so when they meet them in the shops, there is that stigma. And so they never feel like they are part of the community. We also have ethnographic studies that have been done when you go really in-depth, especially for people who are in sociology and anthropology. Then we have also quantitative studies that will do correlation, specific issues, and how they relate on health. My paper that is out, which has already been peer-reviewed, is actually a quantitative one where we looked on specific variables and how they correlated to specific issues in terms of what they said about their health and the neighborhoods. The limitation for this study is that it was a small sample size. Remember, they are very at hard risk. They are very at hard to reach populations. They ask you, why do you want to know about me? Remember, this is Burundians. They had Tutsis and Hutus. They don't know if you represent any one of those groups who is against them. They also still don't understand why people should be asking them things because they have not been used so much to research. So a small sample size. Then we call this convenient sampling, the people who are willing to participate. And then we had to use translators. And in between We had people who were asking things that were outside what we were asking them. So we spend a little more time answering questions that are not part of our study, but we had to do that so that they could actually work with us. And of course, they would tell me things sometimes that are not really what is part of the study, but make it look really good because they knew there was an incentive. And then lastly, there is a lot to learn about refugee neighborhoods, given that refugees don't choose to come to a country or to go to any country. They don't even choose a neighborhood like I would choose having come here. They don't even choose to live, like when they reached here and they were told the 18-year-old children have to leave their home if you have to maintain a free housing. That was very traumatizing for them, and we had to go and plead for them. Then if they quarreled in the house, because they also abuse substance a lot, the children would be taken by the child protection services. In Africa, children belong to you. We had to educate them about the U.S. policy. You can't fight, otherwise your children are taken. So the law school had to do a lot in terms of educating them on the law of America and the Department of Family and Health Studies and Family and Child Development. They had to do a lot in terms of advocating for their children not to be taken. And when they are taken, they are brought back. So there's a lot in terms of educating the policy makers, program planners, resettlement agencies on how meaning is made of the environment and even resettlement as a whole in terms of people who are in forced migration, and that how it impacts their life, not just as they arrive, but for as long as they live here. Many of them told us, we are willing to go back to Africa if our life is not going to change, or if we have to stay here being called refugees, we'd rather be refugees in a camp than refugees in a country that is foreign. And then lastly, we need more studies. I'm actually now in Dallas working with big populations because Dallas is really big on refugees. So I'll continue with my study on Burundian refugees, but also compare with other refugees. I'm also planning to go to Nairobi, like she said, to talk to them when they are still in transit and see how the meaning is, what they think America is like, and when they reach here, how things are. We also need different data collection methods. Then we also want longitudinal studies. When they arrive, it takes about 10 years for a refugee to really understand where they are and why they're here. Most of them don't want to see who they are as Burundians. They want to keep their culture. They want their children to speak their language. They want their children to eat the food they eat. Yet the children need to be assimilated. They have to speak the language to be accepted in school. So there is a difference in generational perspectives of what it means to be an American, what it means to be resettled, between the older people and the young people. And those are the kind of studies we want to look at continuously across the years for a longer time. So there's a lot you can read about refugees, but this is my focus for the time being. There are so many refugee populations in the U.S., and each of them may have a different experience depending on the context. Thank you.